All right, everyone. We are on paper 117, section 7, the last section, which is old single column, page 1291. Okay, just a little bit more here in this paper. It's obvious where they're going by the title of the section. But to appreciate why they're ending this paper in this fashion, because those of you who are familiar remember what the next paper is. It's one of the more heavy-duty papers, Supreme and Ultimate, Time and Space. They're wanting us to take the fullness of the exploration of the total finite that we've acquired through these three papers, and appreciate the full context in which the Supreme exists. And we've alluded to this over and over. We know that you don't just have the Supreme, we have the Ultimate and the Absolute. And we've been coming to understand what it is that links those three together. What is it that links the three great facets of experiential deity together as one? It's that overarching facet of deity. It's the mother. And so one of the things that you can explore as you move into transcending this Supreme and into the Ultimate is that relationship of between the two via the mother. How does God the Mother transcend that differential? And you'll see we have definitely not left the exploration and the understanding of God the Mother behind, now that we've passed through section 6 here, passed through that apex point of these five papers, where they finally give us that definitive designation that they're constantly referring to. We definitely know is to be called the mother, and it's for obvious reasons, we all know. You'll see they're going to give you really the seeds for just what I was saying, that beginning of seeing the mother as not just the mother expressed at the level of the total finite. Now, and in the process of giving you that which is above the total finite level, it allows you to better appreciate that which is below the total finite level, to really see that full spectrum. Oh, and here, and I forgot to give myself one here. Pull it out. I just haven't had one here. To see that full hierarchy of the mothers, in an increased way. Like I mentioned when we first talked about this chart, we don't bring in the absonite and the absolute really directly in this, because we're paralleling the sevenfold. But that whole domain, below the Supreme, the three levels of the mother below the level of the Supreme, are definitely, your understanding is augmented by always thinking about this reflection about that level of the Supreme, that which is above relative to that which below. There's often a reflective character about that that point of symmetry of the total finite. Okay, so just that little motivation. Let's jump in and explore what we've got here. Are you going to read for us? Yeah.
Where are we going?
Yeah.
You said it's page 12 what?
1291.
1291. Almost there. Just be patient. Remember, you have to be patient.
Yep, got to be patient. It's true.
1291.
Yep, section 7 there. Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
The future of the supreme. The completed realization of all finite potentials equals the completion of the realization of all evolutionary experience. This suggests the final emergence of the Supreme as an almighty deity presence in the universes. We believe that the Supreme, in this stage of development, will be as discreetly personalized as the eternal Sun, as concretely powerized as is the Isle of Paradise, as completely unified as is the conjoint actor, and all of this within the limitations of the finite possibilities of supremacy at the culmination of the present universe age.
Okay. Pause right there. It's always interesting, you know, like we pointed out a number of times, how they start out each of these sections, what they put right up front in that first paragraph. And I've been trying to get everyone, you know, keyed into this. Did anyone notice that there's three things there? There's a sequence of three things. That's a sequence we've been pointing out over and over again ever since they introduced it, you know, at the end of the first of these five papers, at the end of the Supreme Being paper. Focalizer, summarizer, encompasser. Okay? So let's explore that a little bit. Okay, so that first part, discreetly personalized as is the eternal Sun. That's the focalizer. That's the universal mother. They're paralleling the universal mother there. Think about what we've been talking about. Down here in time, in finite space and time, you have the mother as a ubiquitous, personal, purposive phenomenon, extending to the limits of the finite. Personal, you know, it's definitely personalized, you know, and we know it's tied to the eternal Son directly as the eternal Mother Son, you know, that mother deity that's incorporated into the eternal Son. But see, what they're pointing out is, okay, so if we're imagining, you know, heading towards the culmination of the finite and the completion of the Supreme Being, those three facets have to come together as one. So you have what starts out as this extended personal purposive expression, and it's going to become discrete. It's going to focus and become localized. Right now, you certainly can't use the mother, you can't use the word discrete to describe any sort of differential in relationship between you and the mother. I mean, you're in the mother. There's not a separateness there. You're in the mother. You're in her womb. Okay. So discrete would not be the appropriate word. You know, it's a totality attitude. It's a womb. But that aspect, that personal purposive aspect, is going to come to a focus when the finite is completed. You know, in a similar way to the way the creative mother spirit, who's now ubiquitous throughout the local universe, you know, is eventually going to focalize, you know, no longer be an extended expression. So that's the universal mother, as concretely powerized as is the Isle of Paradise. Well, you know, the power pattern aspect, that's the Almighty. And we're very much looking from the bottom up here. This is the individuality viewpoint, and so we should use those individuality words like Universal Mother and Almighty Supreme. So that, you know, they're pointing to the Almighty Supreme, the summarizer, vocalizer, summarizer. But the addition there is concretely, you know, which literally means grown together. We know that as we've studied the Almighty, that summation, or the summation that's tied to the summarizer, the Almighty Supreme, in many ways can be thought of as more a collection, a distribution of parts. You know, there's parts of the Almighty all over the finite. But as we move towards the completion of the finite, those parts are going to grow together. So concretely powerized. Very much that, that is the future body of that supreme being, that concretized power. And then as completely unified as is the conjoint actor. Okay, so we have vocalizer, summarizer, and we have encompasser. We've got the supreme mind. And, what's the parallel? We pointed this out a while back. When you're talking about the conjoint actor, if you want to focus on that unifying attribute of that individual, you can even call that individual the absolute mind, capital A, capital M. Okay, that being, when you're really focusing on the mind functioning of that being and how it encompasses in an absolute way, that's the absolute mind. Well, when you finally have that supreme being, you have a being whose mind encompasses in a total finite way. And if you want to focus on that aspect of that being, rather than just the beingness, or you say the supreme being, you can say the supreme mind, capital S, capital M. You know, another name for the supreme being. But that's where you're really focusing on the supreme being as the encompasser. So they're just, as they start out this section, they're sort of just giving us a re-anchor of what we've been going through over and over and over in these three papers, that you have these three facets: Universal Mother, the Almighty Supreme, and the Supreme Mind, and their relationship to the finite is not identical. There's all kinds of complications, and we've been going through all that. But when all is said and done, those three expressions come together as one. But notice the little qualifier, which is kind of, like I said, we're pointing towards the next paper. Within the limitations of the finite possibilities of supremacy, because we all know once you have that supreme being now as an absonite being, now we begin, really via the catalyst of that supreme being, we all begin the absonite age, okay? And the supreme being it's not like there's nothing left for that being to do. That the supreme being even is a component of the next trinity up. And you have it, in the ultimate trinity, you've got the supreme being there, but you go up to the absolute trinity and the supreme being is in there as well. So there's obviously a very significant phenomenon relative to the supreme in the absonite that is really incomprehensible at this point. Okay, so that hence that qualifier at the end. But nevertheless, that's the point. Those three coming together as one is what we're looking towards, and it's very much a they're encouraging us with this bottom up view, looking up to that final endpoint when you finally have a supreme being, which you don't have now. You have a universal mother, an almighty supreme, and a cosmic imposition of the supreme mind. You don't even really have that in any sort of direct way. And notice how they started out the paragraph too. The other thing just to point out, it doesn't say the completed actualization, or the completion of the actualization. They purposely said realization, because what is going to bring all of this together is one, personality. It's all about, when all is said and done, it's about the ability of personality to transcend all differentials and bring it together, because that personality, that purposing, comes from a point in reality prior to the separation into the Isle of Paradise and the Eternal Son and the Conjoined Actor. It comes from the antecedent of all that. And so it's a gift that can bridge the differentials between matter and spirit and mind. It can bring them together as one. Yeah. So in very many ways, you know, it's the Supreme Being has a spirit-like, a power-like, and a mind-like part together as one through personality. All right, let's just read that little intro blurb there.
Which one?
Yeah, that next sentence there.
While this is an entirely proper concept of the future of the Supreme, we would call attention to certain problems inherent in this concept.
Okay, so before you go anywhere with that, why did they say that? Okay, it's an entirely proper concept, but I gave you the hint already. What is the limitation to the viewpoint that we were doing in that paragraph? It was all right. It was all bottom up. It was all individuality viewpoint. And they told us right at the beginning that you're never going to be able to understand the whole picture of reality if you limit yourself to that bottom up individuality viewpoint. You must challenge yourself to begin to look at it truly both bottom up individuality viewpoint and top down unity viewpoint. And not just the kind of so-called unity viewpoint, where I think I have some spiritual consciousness and I'm imagining unity. The true unity viewpoint is a challenge. That's why mankind has never had any definitive appreciation of God the Mother. Because the truth of God the Mother is really not acquirable from an individuality viewpoint. You can understand the basics of the Universal Father from an individuality viewpoint because he's like this laser beam injection. It's a very individuated phenomenon. The Mother is not like that. You know, she's a womb-like phenomenon. The only way you're going to begin to comprehend the truth of what she is and your relationship to her is if you truly can get yourself turned 180 degrees around from your animal origin self. No amount of exalting of that animal origin consciousness is going to get it done. You have to truly turn it around and see it from that unity viewpoint. Okay, so you know that's whatever they say next is going to have something to do with that. It's going to have something to do with pointing out that even when you try to just wrap your mind around it from the unity viewpoint, there's a couple of obstinate fact points which they see, and they've made a point of revealing them a little bit in this book, just so we can see them too. Okay, and so let's see what they give us here.
One, the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme could hardly be deitized at any stage proper to his completed evolution.
Prior to his, yeah.
And yet these same supervisors, even now, qualifiedly exercise the sovereignty of supremacy concerning the universes settled in light and life.
Okay, so the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme, slightly revealed in the book. If you those of you are familiar extensively with the book, you know you can go back there right at the end of the Light and Life paper, paper 55, and you can see a few comments about them because they start to come into play in a less than background mode when you get local universes settled in light and life. And they talk there about, they're pretty sure they're going to start to play a really definitive role when you get a super universe, if and when, I think they say, you get a super universe settled in light and life. But the key there is, the name that they're given, unqualified supervisors of the Supreme. So they're acting for the Supreme in an unqualified fashion, it says, at least potentially. There's no way you could have an unqualified expression of the Supreme Being without having the Supreme Being first. Okay, from a bottom-up viewpoint, you don't get the Supreme until all is said and done, which means you couldn't get someone who expresses in an unqualified fashion the Supreme Being until all is said and done, but all is not said and done yet. So how can you even have such beings? Even though they don't function in an unqualified fashion, they nonetheless function in a qualified fashion. They exist. They couldn't exist if the universe was purely something that was simplistic, bottom-up, you know, as we initially tend to see things. Yeah. So that's the point of that. Just, you know, not letting the word unqualified just slip by your mind. It's like, wait a minute, that says unqualified. You know, like the Universal Father, you know, being called unqualified in some way, or God the Father being called unqualified in some way. I mean, no qualifications. So you know, it's a powerful word, and that's what you're saying. That word has consequences. Okay, so in other words, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. We have mentioned that several times, that whole antecedent following line. Yeah, that's what they're referring to. The unqualified supervisors of the Supreme are very definite antecedent followings, quote unquote. Now, something that shouldn't be from a simple temporal perspective, and yet is. Okay, about the next one.
Two. The Supreme could hardly function in the Trinity Ultimate until he has attained complete actuality of universe status. And yet, the Trinity Ultimate is even now a qualified reality, and you have been informed of the existence of the qualified vicegerents of the Ultimate.
Okay, well, let's just do that last little bit first, because it really parallels the previous one. Very, very little revealed. Named pretty much. That's verbatim the same sentences you'll find in another spot in the book. And you have been informed of the existence of the qualified vicegerents of the Ultimate. However, right here, there's a little revelation there. If you think about what the implications are of what they're saying. Let's talk about that first, the context in which they say that. Okay, so you know that when all is said and done, we're going to have this first experiential trinity, which is going to be composed of the supreme creators, you know, which is, you know, the creator sons and creator mother spirits, or maybe you should say the master sons and the creative mother spirits, the ancients of days and the master spirits. The supreme creators is one of the three components in that first experiential trinity. The second is the supreme being. And the third is the architects of the master universe. Okay, so in order to have, and it's very definitively written that way, in order to have that Trinity, you have to have the supreme being, not the universal mother, not the almighty supreme, you know, or reflectivity or some vague thing. Definitively, the supreme being. You have to have that completed fact. Well, it doesn't exist yet. So there shouldn't be anything to the first experiential Trinity yet. But those who can discern such things can see it's functioning. Therefore, there has to be a supreme being somehow, an antecedent following again. Now, right here, they're again giving you a clue, which I've really kind of given away by pointing out how this is all individuality viewpoint. But even the way they talk about that first experiential trinity, remember there's two different expressions that they use for that first experiential trinity. They call it this, the Trinity Ultimate, and they also call it the Ultimate Trinity. And when we went through total deity, we pointed out why that is, why each of those has two names. One is the individuality viewpoint name, and the other is the unity viewpoint name. Okay? From an individuality viewpoint, you're really thinking of, okay, I got this bunch and this bunch and this bunch, and I bring them into association. Okay? But from the unity viewpoint, it's one deity. Okay. When you talk, when the individuality viewpoint word is the ultimate trinity, because the paradise trinity, that's also an individuality viewpoint word, because the unity viewpoint is really difficult to wrap your mind around. That's what we did in the total deity, and that's related to the universal one of infinity. But nevertheless, the Trinity Ultimate, that's the unity viewpoint designation. So they purposely use the unity viewpoint designation so that you can, they're trying to get you to flip it and look at it from the top down, where there's a supreme being that, you know, was involved in its coming into existence as the super additive consequence of the relationship between all those facets of deity. You know, that is the Trinity Ultimate. So then, you know, putting those two together. So in other words, see, they're giving you a little clue. Because think about how, okay, the ultimate, you know, this is, you know, you think it's, the first one was difficult. Okay, in order to add the ultimate engaging here, well, now you don't have the ultimate complete until the end of the absonite. Okay, when you have the second experiential trinity in existence. Okay, but like, oh yeah, that's right. God the Supreme is in that trinity. So I could imagine if I took myself all the way up there to the point where I have the God the ultimate, I have his relationship to God the Supreme through the trinity absolute, and then down the ladder of the absonite in the Supreme, down into the first experiential trinity, I've got, and he goes down into the finite. So the unqualified vicegerents of the ultimate, see, the only way they can get through is via the Supreme all the way down. And so now you not only need the Supreme Being, you know, right there at the doorstep of the absonite, you need the Supreme Being all the way at the doorstep of the co-absolute in order to get that all the way down to, so that it somehow, you know, is engaged here. And so, like, you know, the reflective image aids can speak for the qualified vicegerents of the ultimate and things like this, like they talk about. Really antecedent following. Okay.
Ultimate antecedent.
Yeah, right? So they're saying, you know, we would call attention to certain problems with a pure bottom-up viewpoint, see? Okay. Yeah.
some of the problem solved in the, both of these paragraphs, they say even now qualifiedly,
right?
And the second, even yeah. now qualified reality.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it'd be illogical if they were functioning in totality.
Okay, so that
it has to be qualifiedly.
Some of our quandary of up
right.
and down.
Right. It's not. It's not like somehow. All of that is already here. I mean, that's obviously not the case. Or, you know, we wouldn't be struggling with day-to-day life. Okay? We would be way transcendent of Avona here if that was true. You know, if there was unqualified stuff literally in play.
But then the other question is that the Supreme as the Almighty, as the Mother, etc., is in existence down here, has a relationship to its final self.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. That's okay. Coming up. That's where they're moving us. You'll see when we get there. Okay, how about the next one?
Three. The Supreme is not completely real to universe creatures, but there are many reasons for deducing that he is quite real to the sevenfold deity, extending from the universal father on paradise to the creator sons and the creative spirits of the local universes.
Okay, and that one, again, you know, it's just handy to have this chart so that you can look at it right in front of you. Whenever we, you know, list the sevenfold creators, you know, whenever the revelers, you know, who is that creator that's at the supreme level? You know, it's the Supreme Being. Okay? So if this creative action is going to start at the Universal Father and get all the way down so that it can manifest in a creator son or a master son, it's got to go through the Supreme Being to get there. And it can't magically do that. There has to be literally a supreme being to link that up. There can't be a sevenfold without a supreme being. Well, but there isn't a supreme being yet. Ah, I guess I can't look at it just in a bottom-up viewpoint, can I? Yeah. I mean, and we, you know, we tried to point that out when we went through total deity. I'm thinking about that facet of deity that is the sevenfold. I mean, that is the God of reaction to the existence of creatures. You bring creatures into existence, you draw them up out of the dust, and God reacts to that fact and reaches down to engage. That's a very definitively facet of deity that you can really only understand in a direct way as a downstepping phenomenon. To reach us, it brought the Supreme Being into existence and then kept going. See, from the unity, total unity viewpoint, you start with the infinite, then you make the absolute, then you make the absonite, and then you make the finite. But from a finite viewpoint, it's the other way around, you know, from a bottom-up viewpoint, a temporal viewpoint. But the truth is, it's both. Because it isn't really the line that we want to think one way or the other. And remember, that's the whole point of going through total deity, is to get the infinite eternal ellipse, to get the full picture that doesn't have ends. You know, yes, it has different ways that you can go around. You can start at the original on the infinity side and reach down in father-like fashion, or you can start at the original on the eternity side and reach down in mother-like fashion. And they obviously both happen. The original is and the original functions simultaneously both ways. And very much when you understand that coming from eternity to us rather than from infinity to us in father-like fashion, you know, that's starting at the infinite, going to the absolute upholder, you know, the mother is an absolute fact, you know, then the absentite upholder, and then the finite upholder. Now, it's definitely coming down like that. It can't become a finite upholder until it's an absentite upholder, and it can't become an absentite upholder until it's an absolute upholder. So, you know, you just thinking about that, you already are getting a sense that, the mother is probably the key to really beginning to have, to break this kind of logical log jam between our bottom-up viewpoint and our relationship to the Father. But then how do you have all this other stuff happening, like unqualified supervisors of the Supreme functioning in a very, very, very qualified state of the finite? Okay, so just, you know, just three little examples that even with our lowly perspective, with the help of the revelation, you know, okay, yeah, I get that. That is a problem. So what's the solution? Okay, well, give us next.
It may be that on the upper limits of the finite, where time conjoins transcended time, there is some sort of blurring and blending of sequence. It may be that the Supreme is able to forecast his universe presence onto those supertime levels and then, to a limited degree, anticipate future evolution by reflecting this future forecast back to the created levels as the imminence of the projected incomplete. Such phenomena...
It should sound complicated, that's the point.
Yes, such phenomena may be observed wherever finite makes contact with superfinite, as in the experiences of human beings who are indwelt by thought adjusters that are veritable predictions of man's future universe attainments throughout all eternity.
Okay, so let's start with the easiest part first. Let's start with the end of the paragraph there.
Yeah.
Okay? And you see that, obviously, you know, they did what they always do. They try to bring it home to something. It's like, wait, I think I can grab a hold of that. Okay, let me see if I can build from there. Okay? They just did it again. Okay, so let's think about that. I mean, the first part is just directly what they said. I mean, that's obvious. You know, they come with this plan, the thought adjuster, and you know that's a plan for here to eternity. So definitely, that has a measure of this antecedent following character to it. But think about something that's a little bit more intimate. We know that the adjuster comes, one of the reasons the adjuster comes is to build our soul. Souls don't grow on their own. They have to be built by someone who has the kind of hands that can build souls, an adjuster. And how does that work? Well, if I consecrate my mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, if I get an expression of harmony going in my adjutant mind through all the gifts, through the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, through all of that help, if I actually do it, if I actually get a little measure of harmony flowing in my adjutant mind, the adjuster says, that has survival value. Let's copy that. The adjuster actually makes a brick of soul that copies that little measure of harmony-like flow that you've managed to establish. All the chaos, no. Okay, it's just ignoring that. That little thread of harmony that you got going there, it copies that. Well, it's not just out of sight, out of mind copy, because it works both ways. The adjuster is a linkage between your adjutant mind and the mindedness even of that soul. And we talked about that. Okay. So once you have that measure of harmony made substance in your soul, you can have a positive feedback. Because, you know, that could be really handy, because this unity-like, or this harmony-like flow that I got going, well, what if I get distracted and it unravels? which your liquid-like mind is wont to do. Okay, wouldn't it be great if there was a substance that didn't unravel and could kind of remind the liquid what that flow is like? Yeah, that soul through the adjuster, you know, reflects. So think about this. You see, they were using that word. You create this thing; it goes up. And there's a reflection off that soul, then back into your mind of a little catalytic influence from that soul of just to reinforce and keep that harmony flowing. And in many ways, when humans say, you know, they believe that they've experienced something in their mind that ought to be called soul, they haven't actually experienced the soul directly as a substance. What they've experienced is this rock solid reflection that's reinforced by the actual substance of the soul that's in your adjutant mind. That's an example, see, of long before you actually have transferred the seed of your consciousness onto that soul and you're literally using it, you're using it before, indirectly. Okay? There's a whole, we talked about, that's why they call the Supreme Being an oversoul. Because the Supreme Being himself isn't down in time, just like you aren't literally using your soul as a brain right now. Okay. But the reflection is, the presence is, the cosmic presence of the Supreme Being is here. For instance, one of the things he has is that Supreme Mind. What is the name for the cosmic presence of the Supreme Mind? Universe Reflectivity. The Supreme Mind itself is not literally down here. You know, universe reflectivity isn't literally the Supreme Mind, but it is the cosmic reflection down in. Because, you know, when we talked about that, they pointed to that. You know, when we finally could understand it, once we put the whole hierarchy of the mother together, you know, that you bring into existence those reflective mother spirits and those creative mother agencies, and you get the full upwelling cosmic mind goes all the way up and hits the supreme level. It's going to be reflection. Okay? And it literally is called universe reflectivity. Mm-hmm. The reflection of that cosmic mind, but you know, off the supreme mind and hence back down into the cosmos as an additional phenomenon separate from the literalness of the cosmic mind itself. Okay? So there's a number of things that we've touched upon that are similar to this phenomenon. Okay, now that first part, and just notice not only is it hard to understand, but they purposely say it's like, well, it may be, and there is some sort of blurring, and okay, they're waving. You know, that's a hand waving argument. Okay. And what? Why does it have to be so hand wavy? Because it's a bottom up argument, okay. And let's bring that to a point with that proper designation that they throw in, the imminence of the projected incomplete. Okay, that's, we can talk about that. We can dissect that because of our first paragraph here. It reminded us we've got these three parts. The incomplete. Okay, you've got the incomplete Almighty right now, and you can, you know, this sort of concretized collection of parts, the incomplete Almighty. Okay, well, we can imagine our bottom-up viewpoint projecting it up to the completed Supreme Being and reflecting off of that back into time, into space and time, off of that ceiling, if you will, of the finite, the level of the total finite, as the immanence, as the mother. And we know that the immanence is the mother. It's a reflection of the transcendence of the Supreme Being. And so you could, from the bottom-up viewpoint, you could construct this, this very elaborate name, the immanence of the projected incomplete, to try to, and of course, you know, some sort of hand-wavy magic happens, you know, like they say, well, there's some sort of blending or blurring, blah, 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 okay, and it comes back, and then I've got the mother. I don't really know why or how, but I at least I can kind of rationalize it. We can do better than that. We can take the unity viewpoint. Because what is it? We know, we've talked about this a number of times, that fundamentally God as transcendence is God the Father, and God as immanence is God the Mother. And we know that God the Mother is just like God the Father. Just as God the Father is an overarching, or the Father is an overarching facet of deity, it overarches the Son, the Spirit, in the aisle, the mother is an overarching facet of deity that overarches the supreme, the ultimate, and the absolute. Okay? Above all and through all is God the Mother. From the top-down viewpoint, the immanence that we experience in the finite here, that we call as an individuality the universal mother, is easy to understand. You know, there's a full reservoir of infinite motherness that's being downstepped, okay? It doesn't have to do with something that's welling up, and you can rationalize it that way, but most directly, where does the immanence that's here come from? It just comes down and in, okay? It's much clearer to understand when you have that top-down viewpoint and when you have what you recognize finally in that top-down viewpoint, when you have the mother, when you have, you know, just like they said up there in the Paradise Trinity paper, you know, that functionality of the Trinity, one of the functionalities is totality attitudes, a hierarchy of wombs. This hierarchy of wombs. It starts at that farthest extent of the Father. The Father starts at the first center and reaches through the first source and the universal Father and the universal creator and the universal controller all the way to the infinite upholder end of the Father. And at that point, it begins a downstepped reach of upholdingness, the hierarchy of mothers, the hierarchy of totality attitudes. You know? There isn't just a totality attitude. There isn't just the infinite upholder. There isn't just the womb of the infinite where father and mother become one. There, and hence, is not really that what I'm looking for. When I use the word mother, I want that to be different than father. You know, I don't want the initiator. I don't want God as transcendence. I want God, you know, touching right here, in here with me. I want to be in her. I need God as immanence. Yeah. And the boundary walls of the infinite womb are just not very intimate for a tiny little speck of the finite like me. Yeah. You know there has to, that womb has to be downstepped to come in and intimately conform to you. So it's just, when you think about it, it's obvious. It's so definitely something that is only coming down to you. That immanence, you can just say the immanence, okay? The supreme immanence, you know, the mother supreme. You can let go of all of the complex analytical stuff of trying to understand it from the bottom-up viewpoint and having to have all sorts of hand-waving. Okay. It's just a mother. It's just plain and simple. That's all there is to it. All right. So that really, see, was tied to. You can only have that conversation in the wake of Section 6, in the wake of fully having that word in play. You know, and not only just one word, but, you know, we can use the mother, we can use God the mother, we can use the mother supreme, we can use the universal mother, depending on what we want to stress, what we want to emphasize about deity as mother. So we're going to do that all the time now. When we finish these five papers, we're going to roll around to the beginning, and we're going to start reading, you know, you get through the foreword, and we'll start reading the five papers on God the Father, and guess what you're going to find there? You're not just going to find God the Father in there. You're going to find God the Mother in there, too, now that you know what you're looking for. Like, search for the phrase, the imminence of the projected input complete. It occurs two times. Guess where the other time it occurs? Probably in those first five papers. Yeah. You know who that is now. That's the Mother. And it has to be that way. Like I pointed out, one of the main purposes of those first five papers is to reveal the truth of God the Father. One of the key truths of the Father is that the Father is the initiator. The Mother's a focalizer. The Father's the initiator. And so if you think about those first five papers, they're a series of vignettes initiating every subject in the book, just like He initiates all things and beings. They constructed those, you know, if you want to study anything that's, you know, elaborated in great detail in the rest of the book, don't be surprised if you find a root back there in those first five papers where it's initiated, including the Mother, including the concept of the Mother. Those are the initiator papers. Those are the Father papers. Okay. Let's do some more.
When mortal ascenders are admitted to the final either corp of paradise, they take an oath to the Paradise Trinity, and in taking this oath of allegiance, they are thereby pledging eternal fidelity to God the Supreme, who is the Trinity as comprehended by all finite creature personalities. Subsequently, as the final either companies function throughout the evolving universes, they are solely amenable to the mandates of paradise origin until the eventful times of the settling of local universes in light and life, as the new governmental organizations of these perfected creations begin to be reflective of the emerging sovereignty of the Supreme. We observe that the outlying finaliter companies then acknowledge the jurisdictional authority of such new governments. It appears that God the Supreme is evolving as the unifier of the evolutionary core of the finality, but it is highly probable that the eternal destiny of these seven core will be directed by the Supreme as a member of the ultimate Trinity.
Okay, bunch of things there. Just yeah. The very last thing is just notice. Did you notice what did they call the experiential Trinity this time? They flipped it. This is the individuality viewpoint name rather than the unity viewpoint name. Yeah, see, this is the ultimate Trinity, not the Trinity ultimate. Because they're speaking in that bottom-up viewpoint, and so it's most properly called that in that context. They're very, very precise about that. Notice those little details. They're clues about where they want you to be when you read and try to understand that, you know, that paragraph. Okay, now, okay, there's a lot there, but if you're kind of following it.
You take an oath.
Okay, remember how we talked in the last couple times, I think, about how you've got to think very precisely. If you kind of just gloss over, it's there. You're going to misunderstand what they're trying to say. Here they're doing a little test. You know, like I said, we kind of just sort of really used the Mother in a big peek, and so they gave you a quiz. The next paragraph is a little quiz. See if you're on your game yet. Because if you look really closely, this, okay, so all right, let me see if I can understand this. So they're talking about the finaliters, and I'm on paradise, and I take oath of the Paradise Trinity, which is thereby pledging internal fidelity to God the Supreme. Okay, and then I go out there, and things get deeper and deeper, settle in light and life, and then I seem to take an oath to God the Supreme. Wait a minute. I thought I took an oath to God the Supreme to start with. Right, I'm confused. Okay. You know, if you force yourself to take a very superficial viewpoint of that paragraph is illogical, and you've just proven that the revelators don't know what they're talking about. They can't even write a sentence that's logical. Okay. It's a simple little test to see if you can read the truth of what they're saying. Because remember, God the Mother is revealed experientially, not existentially, not like a laser beam in the book. You have to have discovered it, and only then can you see it. Okay? They give you plenty of clues. You know, they didn't just say that you took an oath to the God of the Supreme. They said directly that you take an oath to the Paradise Trinity. Okay? The side of the original that's the source of God the Mother. You know, we know, we've gone through this countless times. Whenever we see Trinity now, we know we've got something that's tied very intimately to the Mother. You know, and not so immediately to the Father necessarily. Okay? And we talked about that last time. What are we doing when, you know, we've completed the consecration of our will to the perfect will of God the Father before we enter Avona? That's why they all let us in. If you don't have perfect consecration to the will of God the Father, they're not going to let you into Havona. You know, that's like thinking they're going to let you and I, you know, onto a world that's settled in light and life. You know, unless you were in a hermetically sealed cage, you know, okay, they're not going to let you into. Okay, you have to have perfect, you know, perfection of purpose. You have to have perfect consecration to the perfect will of God the Father before they even let you in. And so you've completed that consecration before you get there. You know, what are you doing there? You talked about, you know, you are finally now acquiring, you know, divinity. Nature of God the Mother as you ascend through Havona. Okay? Because you're now being fully sparked by the Father to be able to do that. The Father can engage you without a breath now because of your perfect consecration. He can initiate, you know, in the fullness of initiation. And now you can actually grow the divinity of God the Mother. Okay? So that you go out, God the Mother revealing as a finality. You know that's what we do. We've talked about that. God the Father seeking, God the Mother revealing. Okay, so when they say that those finalities are going about pledging eternal fidelity to God the Supreme, well, okay, you know, maybe when we transcend to the finite, you can talk about God the Supreme directly. But right now, it's God the Supreme as God the Mother that I've you know, as a finality, I've pledged fidelity to. It's not the fullness of God the Supreme, where the Almighty and the, you know, the whole thing is all together as one. We're not there yet. Okay, as that personal thing that I would pledge an oath to, I'm not going to pledge an oath to it, to the Almighty Supreme. I've got to pledge an oath to a person, a personalized phenomenon, to She, the Universal Mother, yeah, the Mother Supreme. Okay, so that's what they're talking about. But we know that, you know, as a finaliter, you're God the Supreme seeking. You know, and they're talking about some that are getting really close to finding. You know, they're out there working in local universes that are becoming settled in light and life, and the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme are starting to come into more direct play, and they're not looking back to paradise as much anymore. They're, you know, as a God revealing of what they acquired on paradise, they're starting to really get close to the destiny, you know, really focusing their eyes on the goal here of the finite, of the God the Supreme together, you know, that they're seeking. So that's the point. See, when they say God the Supreme, you got to think about the context. Are they really meaning the fullness? You know, or are they talking about now, where it's just, you know, the Supreme as the Mother? It's not the He yet, it's the She. It hasn't come altogether at that point, phenomenon yet. Okay, so, you know, and that's what I tried to point out when we went through section 6. You know, there was a couple things like that too, where they, even in the midst of finally giving you those designations of the Mother, they say it in such a way that you could easily, it's like, well, I don't really get this Mother stuff. Let me just kind of, it says Supreme Being too, so I'll just go with that. They give you an easy out, you know. It's only when you start to appreciate the subtleties, like, well, oh, I see. They put that parenthetical about the Supreme Being because the noun was sons, you know. And so technically, I'm not a son of the Universal Mother. I'm a child of the Universal Mother. I will eventually, when all is said and done, be a son of the Supreme Being, like I'm now a son of the Universal Father. I'm a son of a He, and I'm a child of a She. You know, they had two things going at the same time in that paragraph. And that's why they needed a parenthetical. Without the parenthetical, the sentence would have been illogical. With the parenthetical, it's potentially understandable and potentially misunderstandable. Remember? More or less distortion of meaning. You have to always have that in play. Don't let yourself, you know, think an obviously illogical thought about a sentence. You know it's written logically. Figure out what it is. That's the mistake that, you know, that a lot of intellectuals, you know, looking at the book have made. You know, they approach it as fact finders first, not truth seekers first. Well, if you're a fact finder first, you're an error seeker and an error finder, guaranteed. Okay? Facts are not self-truthizing. Okay? You have to have a relationship to truth. You know? And then and only then are you going to put the flow through the facts properly. And really, then and only then are the facts even worth thinking about. Fact schmacks. I mean, what do you care about facts if you don't have truth? I mean, you know, what good are fence posts if you don't have the, you know, the wires to string along the fence? Okay? I mean, fence posts are of no use in keeping cattle in a pasture. Okay? Facts are not useful in and of themselves. They're only useful in the context of truth. You know, the revelation is only useful in the context of truth. It'll either be just a mirror, a reflection of your pre-existent ignorance, or it will be a source of error, you know, in your mind. You know, if you've tried to just, you know, if you really engage it extensively and are constantly pouring new wine into old wineskins, and it's not less distortion of meaning, it's just nothing but more distortion of meaning every time you do that. You're going to misunderstand what they're saying.
New-minded, old minds.
Yeah. And again, just like I said last time, you know, this—it's nothing new. Everyone knows this. Even, you know, studiers of the Bible, you know, and the teachings of Jesus there know this. They know that Jesus said parables in this way, where if you didn't have ears to hear, guess what? You would misunderstand everything he said, go off on completely wrong tangents, and be totally self-satisfied with your initial ignorance.
Start plotting his death.
Okay? Only if you chose to have truth in your mind first could you even hear what he really was saying. This is a revelation just like his words were. It's written the same way. Yeah. All right.
Question.
Yeah.
Did you do all of Section 6 last week?
No. Took us 2 weeks.
Yeah. Took you 2 weeks.
Previously on Lost. That's where all the references, the actual references to God the Mother are. There's like
right.
Nine.
Yeah.
Of them.
For those of you who, yeah, weren't there, just let me give that little comment there. You know, I said when we started these five papers, you know, these were a Pentateuch about God the Mother. I mean, on the surface, they're a Pentateuch about experiential deity. But, you know, you're discovering, well, what's the overarching facet of experiential deity? You know, it's God the Mother. And, you look through the whole five papers. Chris says it's about the Mother. It's like, well, I don't see much about the Mother here. I see two times that they say creative mother spirit. And that has the word Mother in it. One time way towards the beginning of the five papers. And one time way towards the end of the five papers, it says creative mother spirit. And then nothing else. Not nary the word mother anywhere, except in section 6. And then only in 7 paragraphs, but 9 times in those 7 paragraphs. Mother, 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 mother. Okay? Because she is the individuality of the whole. She is that point of focus in the whole. The five papers of the whole. She's at the center of the whole. You know, and for those of you who haven't picked up on that, we've been talking about this. To carefully look at these five papers. There's a header note, a very curious, odd little two-sentence preface to the first paper. It's like, well, why even bother? Why not just put that into the first section if you're just going to... So there's this weird little tiny header note. And then at the end of the fifth paper, there's one of those little footnote things, you know, in the square brackets, an extended footnote. So there's a header note and a footnote in parallel. And then 21 sections, coming in from each end, obviously not a coincidental number, 7 times 3, 21 sections on each side, you know, give you the fullness of the whole, and then there's one section in the middle, section 6 of this paper, where it's mother, 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 mother. Right smack in the dead middle of the 5 papers is the mother, the individuality of the whole. Just like the creative mother spirit, now that she's a creative mother spirit, not just a creative spirit, she's not totally uniformly diffused through the local universe. She's thicker on Salvington. Okay? There's a center that's been added to the source. And she's a center source now. She's thicker in the center of the local universe. The mother is the thickest, the center of these 5 papers. It reveals the truth of the mother. Every little detail like that. Nothing is missed. That's the magnificent craftsmanship of the book. You know, and if once you see that, if it isn't self-evident that Bob didn't write it, then, <Yeah. laughs>
<Yeah. laughs>
All right, what we got next here?
The Supreme Being contains three. The Supreme Being contains 3 superfinite possibilities for universe manifestation. 1, absonite collaboration in the first experiential trinity. 2, co-absolute relationship in the second experiential trinity. And 3, co-infinite participation in the trinity of trinities. But we have no satisfactory concept as to what this really means.
And just one little quick note there.
Notice
that, you know, we talked about the first two when we were going through their little examples there in 1, 2, 3 at the beginning. You know, they were 1 and 2. There wasn't an example that tied to number 3 here because they don't know of one. Okay. You know, obviously the Supreme is somehow in there when you bring the Trinity Ultimate and the Trinity Absolute together with the Paradise Trinity and make the Trinity Infinite. The Supreme is in there somehow, and that must have some ramifications now, but, you know, what it is beyond even the Revelators. Hence their very honest statement there.
So, refreshing.
Yeah.
Were they taught that this is what it is, in number 3,
No, I mean, logically, you just know it is. I mean, from what I just said, you know, logically, it has to be there. But technically, what are we talking about?
No detail.
You know, we talked about that. You can, you know, when we went through total deity, you can build up, you know, in a fairly significant way up to that point of having the Trinity and Trinities and getting an initial understanding of that. And but still, you got some real complicated things that you're trying to bring together as one there. Most fundamentally, that you've got the embodiments of the totality of all the motion of the finite and the absonite, those first two experiential trinities, coming into intimate blend, quote-unquote, you know, or whatever word you want to use, with the Paradise Trinity, where the word, you know, adjective paradise means stasis in an absolutely transcendent sense. So you have the fullness of motion somehow being able to interface with the very definition of stasis. You know, another time when you use that adjective, the Paradise Isle. Okay, why do you call it that? Because it's the one thing in the universe that's not in motion. Okay, it is the center of motion. Now, all motion is relative to it. You know, so, you know, it's complicated to try to even understand what the heck that is when you bring all that together, let alone what expression it might have way down in some tenuous way from the infinite down to here. You know, so that's why they're saying that. You know, so it's, you have the logical beginnings, but you can't take it deductively anywhere. You know, you have a logical starting point, but what that implies, you know, they're shrugging their shoulders. They don't know what it really implies. Okay, oh, over here. I'm so used to the reader being over here.
Quick question.
Yeah.
All these papers are sponsored by a mighty messenger.
Right.
A mighty messenger is technically a was a mortal.
Right, was a mortal, but very important. The reason we talked about that, why is he in charge of writing papers that are overarching about the mother?
He's Trinitized.
Because he's you know, to become a mighty messenger, he was Trinitized. He was seized by the Trinity. Remember, he is now really a stationary phenomenon. He's not an ascending phenomenon in any way anymore.
Right. He's a mighty messenger.
He does not grow now. He's not participating in the growth of the Supreme anymore. He is functioning as an agent of mother likeness now, a stationary level. You know, not right. caught up in the initiator.
So he's made that oath of allegiance.
Right. Yeah, and even more so than you and I, you know, it's just a mere fine. You know, he not only made that oath, but having made that oath, he was seized by the Trinity. He said, I can use you. You've got just the things I need. I've got all these levels, all these hierarchies of my totality attitude. I've got a level here that's missing something, and I need someone to stay on that level and help me with that level for trillions of years, and you're it.
Because you're a mortal, that might help other ones.
Jason.
How do we know this mighty messenger is a he?
At that point, even as a finality, you know, you've translated a lot of your gender nature, but the key is here. It's sort of a reinitiation of a daughter-like role. Let's say he was a he. So that he didn't begin on his mortal sphere with a brief little stint serving for the local his local universe mother in a daughter-like role, in a more stationary, non-ascending-like role. You know, Creative Mother Spirit pointed to you and said, I need some help. I need you to not just immediately start racing towards the top. I need you to dwell a little bit. For just a little while, I need you to function as a daughter. Okay, because I can't do it. I can't be a material womb. I can't be a material upholder down there intimately holding that baby. I can't, you know, rock the cradle that's going to fraternize with destiny at that level. Okay, I need you to do it. Okay, but it's just for a little while. Okay, well, if he was a he never got that call. He's just, you know, in complete emptiness and ignorance, he was told he was supposed to start somehow ascending. Okay. And but let's say he starts as he and he gets all the way to finality and then the mother points at him, selects him. Well, now he gets to do that daughter like mode on the other end of the instead of at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it doesn't matter it doesn't matter if they start out as a daughter or a mother, they're gonna serve in that more, you know, just like when you're talking about seraphim functioning in a mother like mode, then they're called daughters. Because they're not an ascending thing, they're functioning at a certain level, helping the mother uphold at that level. But we all know that seraphim can do that for a while, and then they get a different calling to ascend, go all the way up, you know, and come back out as a master seraphim. And then they're functioning in a father-like mode. Okay, you know, no warm fuzzy. Cuddly blanket anymore. We know there were two seraphic ministry papers. We went through those. First one is about seraphim functioning in mother-like mode. The second one is a seraphim functioning in a father-like mode. And you've got all that heavy-duty, Most High's rule in the kingdoms of men, and you know you start seeing images of the angels with the swords, you know, instead of the angels with the blankets. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Get your mouth off that blade.
Yes.
Put the blanket over
the
blade. I just had a thought relative to the thing to begin with, which this distinction is vital. And we have no relationship except to the one thing, and as the community of the whole.
Right through her. Yep.
It eliminates this idea, which is so debilitating in this initial life of competition among ourselves. That idea of being selected, as you're talking about, mm-hmm. you know, to fulfill a certain role, that won't have any meaning to any of the others. Right. It's an individualized
absolutely
faith.
Individual,
absolutely
personalized.
Individualized,
yep.
And
yep.
There won't be like six people standing and go, "Well,
I wanted
why didn't
spot.
They pick me?"
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, so I mean, just you know, we've talked about that. Just reflect on how obvious it is when you start to think about it. If I just tried to live out my father recognition, I mean, that's going to lead to some problematic social relationship issues. Okay, because if I just do nothing but identify with a father absolutely initiating me, then I know that I'm not some self-declared island universe. He declared me to be the island universe. Everyone should revolve around me. I am the one. And I mean, this can go very bad very quickly if you don't have some sense, there's another facet here. That father doesn't connect me to others. But that doesn't mean that I'm not supposed to be connected to others. The only reason the universe exists is to create true relationship. If we wanted to just have one absolute perfect island universe, we had it at the beginning. It's called the I Am. Okay? The one thing we're missing there is true relationship. Okay? And the Father is not the direct means for that. Obviously, you can't have relationship if you don't have individuals. He creates you as a definitive, as a matter of fact, eternal individuation, but who connects you to others? Who actually makes the purpose of the universe happen after that initiation?
Mom.
God the Mother does.
She's the glue.
Only through her individuality are we connected one personality to another.
Chris? Yep. In a way, on a mortal level, that seems kind of true, that in the family, extended family, it's usually the mother who's the connector, you know. If
she's the
one that sends out the letters to keep everybody informed and kind of connected. She's
sure.
The one that makes the plan for the social get-together.
Yeah, and is it because she read the manual? No. You're given a thing called maternal instinct. So you just do it without thinking about it. Because there has, you know, upholding can't be a pure choice, or humanity would cease to exist the moment it was created. You have to just automatically do her job a little bit. Just be an upholder without thinking about it. There has to be a maternal instinct. Okay, we can muddle by for long periods of time without any definitive direction, but there's going to be nothing if there's no place. That has to be given to mankind by grace. And it's not given to me, it's given to you. You fraternize with destiny because, I mean, there is no potential for destiny if there's no place to start. There has to be a place to start. And it can't just be a coincidence that someone stumbled into it. It has to be there. It has to be built in definitively enough that mankind, in their complete ignorance a million years ago, can have some upholding happening so that you can get to now. Okay? However, now it's time for there to be more happening than just the lowest common denominator, you know. Now is the time we've steamed out of the sheltered phase and all those such, you know. Yeah. But that's another story. But anyway, it just, once you have, this is a thing, you can start to very definitively understand, we can understand ourselves and what's going on if we have what comes from both sides of the original. If we just have the Father side, it's infinitely lopsided. Our perspective of ourselves and what we're supposed to be doing and everything. You have to have the other side. And it hasn't been revealed because it hasn't been necessary, indispensable, like it is now. It's the fifth epical revelation of God the Father, because we do need a little bit clearer, you know, understanding of God the Father. It's a pretty muddled up till now. But it's the first epical revelation of God the Mother, because now this distinction is vital. It's not something we hope you might stumble on a little bit over a million year time. No, it's vital now. Life cannot go on without it. Vital, living. It's essential to our ongoing livingness. This distinction is vital. That we are not connected with each other except through the Mother. We have to know that. Because all of the potentializing of the brotherhood of man that the Father has done, now literally factualized post-Pentecost, the universal adjusters, you know, we're kindred spirits, but we are not kindred minds. We are not actually the brotherhood of man. Far from it. Only through her can we actualize what he potentialized. We know we have the potential to be the brother of man. We use the phrase all the time, even before he had this or anything. I mean, everyone is just initiated, you know, to say that, yearn for that. How do you actually achieve it? One must do something as well as be something. And the doingness is God the Mother. She's the experiential deity. The Father is the existential deity. He's the beingness. You know?
We'll never achieve it on this planet.
For a long time, yeah.
So long as women or mother is made to be some despised, despicable creature.
Obviously, if we're still in a primitive state, it's hopeless. But even when we get the fullness of recognition of the true value of male and female, and we begin to actually start to have true monogamy, remember, one of the four indispensables of advancing civilization, not just mere monogamy, which just requires loyalty, but true monogamy, which requires effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress.
And fidelity.
Loyalty. Well, loyalty was in there. Loyalty was in there.
That's the
mother.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Yeah. It's going to, just doing it, starting the nucleus of the institutions, the home that has true monogamy, that's a huge challenge. That's a lot of words in that sequence I just rattled off, with a difficult one, conflict right in the middle. But then to expand that, to institutionalize that, to create a civilization predicated on that, that's a lot of work. Especially when you got people who are so primitive that they think that even a biologic female is worthless, let alone having any notion of God the Mother or anything. And God the Father isn't even the Father. He's just the Almighty.
Mm-hmm. The judge.
Right. We don't have the Supreme Mind. We don't have the Universal Mother. We've got a little of the Almighty, and we often have vaguely called the Father. I mean, it's just so muddled up and so limited. You need the fullness of the Father, and then you need the fullness of the Mother, and then you need to understand how the Mother is related to the Supreme. It's not simplistic. There's also the Almighty, and it's complicated. Okay, and there's the sevenfold and all this stuff. But as we've gone through this, we've started, and it's like, wait a minute, I understand the sevenfold a lot better. You know, as we've gone through, it's like, wait, that's me. I recognize me in that pattern. So it isn't just an abstract thing that I'm trying to, that actually is telling me something about me. Where did the way I function come from? Oh, there must be a pattern on high. Yeah, part of that pattern is God the sevenfold. Part of that is the Father. You got to know the sources to understand yourself. Because yourself didn't just come out of nowhere. There's a source for every aspect of you. How the adjuster engages you and how that works. There's a source for that process. It isn't just about you. No. Okay.
Ready?
I think we are.
This is one of the generally accepted hypotheses of the future of the Supreme, but there are also many speculations concerning his relations to the present grand universe subsequent to its attainment of the status of light and life. The present goal of the super universes is to become, as they are and within their potentials, perfect, even as is Havona. This perfection pertains to physical and spiritual attainment, even to administrative, governmental, and fraternal development. It is believed that, in the ages to come, the possibilities for disharmony, maladjustment, and misadaptation will be eventually exhausted in the super universes. The energy circuits will be in perfect balance and in complete subjugation to mind, while spirit, in the presence of personality, will have achieved the dominance of mind.
See how they're just, I forgot that was right there. I mean, they were kind of doing what I was just talking about there.
Exactly.
You know, how those patterns on high play in here. And, you know, and also just like in the middle there, administrative, governmental, fraternal. Okay. You know, that's one of the other differentials about this relative to previous revelations. You know, this gives you a better set of assumptions, not just for your personal spiritual experience, but it gives you a better set of assumptions for government and for science, you know, fundamental physics, and for history and psychology, and, you know, you name it. For Jesus, for the fourth ethical revelation, a better set of assumptions there. Yeah, it's a better set of assumptions for everything because it isn't just about perfection of purpose. It isn't just about that pure relationship to the Father. There's a whole rest of infinity. You know, that's just about the part that freed itself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. Mm-hmm. What about the rest of it? You know, and like we said, I mean, what does immanence mean? It means remain within.
Imminently, it will come.
You know, when he freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity and became God as transcendence of the whole, he didn't leave it void. There's the God that remains within, literally what the word immanence means, God the Mother. And it's got to be, if the Father is this big, you know, and relates to the whole, he's got to be relating the whole through the individuality of the whole. The Mother has to be just as big as the Father. They're on equal footing. You know? It's just like recognizing that spirit is not, you know, the substance, and matter is at best a shadow and maybe actually evil. No, the Isle of Paradise and the Eternal Sun are like this, and not like this. Yeah, as we're moving up, we start with matter through mind, you know, move to spirit. That's an experiential ascension experience. But when you get there, you find the substance of the aisle, the dirt you're standing on, called Manoda, is when you try to feel it, and you try to feel the eternal sun, it's like, well, that's a distinction in name only. Remember what they tell you? Not even they. I mean, it is so on equal footing that it's a distinction in name only. Paradise spirit and paradise matter, you know, they know there's a difference, but what exactly it is? Okay? I mean, in the same way that you now know from the revelation that matter and spirit should be viewed on an equal footing, because after all, you have to blend and make a soul. Can't have them like that. No soul. Got to be on equal footing, or you can't make soul. Father and mother are the same way. You know, you can't have the whole universe working, you know, if you don't have them on equal footing. You know, as much as you need to be very definitively made a being, you have to be very definitively, just as definitively connected to other beings.
Chris.
Yeah.
And so as spirit and matter go from paradise out to the material worlds, mm-hmm. mind bridges those.
Right, they become more and more separate, and more mind is needed to bridge them.
So back on paradise, what's the role of mind?
Yeah, well, remember, when you go back to the absolute sources of matter and spirit, you have the body of the eternal sun and the substance of the eternal isle, you know, and that relationship between from substance to substance is the absolute mind of the conjoint actor. However, you know there's an absolute of absolutes. I can go prior to absolute matter, absolute spirit, and absolute mind. And I can go back to the first source and center, and now I've got something that doesn't need to bridge any gaps because there is no differentiation. You know, it not only, when you view it from the individuality viewpoint, it's that which is prior to the differentiation, all differentiations, but from the unity viewpoint, it's that which is undifferentiatable. You know, everything that he could, he separated out. He's what's left, the part that can't be split into a matter-like and a spirit-like part or the mind-like coordinate superadditive consequence or anything like that. Okay? You know? Yeah. So there's two ways. Now, and not only do you have the absolute mind that can encompass any differential, even at the absolute level, but if that isn't enough, sometimes the Father intervenes directly, because sometimes, you want to just skip the whole bridging and encompassing and all the stuff all together. Just give you it directly together as one. You know, in, he steps in just as, you know, pure spirit and pure energy simultaneously, a difference in name only. You know, like we've said so many times, that's the thing to begin to really appreciate about the personal ministry of that first source and center. It's not just pure spirit. It's not just father fragments. It's also pure energy. And they're one and the same thing. If you lay out all the father fragments and you turn them around, that's the force charge of space. They're the same thing. Pure energy and pure spirit are, there can't be any differential because they're from the point that's prior to the differentiation. So it's a distinction just for the understanding of experience. But, you know, the more you come in relationship to your adjuster, the more you're coming into a relationship with pure energy as much as pure spirit. You know, and we all know that that's one of the things that's starting to happen with these finaliters they're talking about here that are getting towards the, you know, the threshold of the absonite. And when you get into the absonite, that's when you have these blendings of energy and spirit, this whole linear differential of matter, spirit, and a line of mind. You know, we transcend all of that simple first two triodity stuff. Okay? It all gets really blended and complicated. You know? Yeah. Anyway, let's see. Before we go on, was there?
What a nice digression.
Yeah, it was a nice digression. Just want to make sure I didn't leave anything behind, though, that might be essential. Let's see. There was one little thing I wanted to point out. Notice the fun little triplet of words or expressions there again? Disharmony, maladjustment, and misadaptation. Think about that. You know, you should have some clues. We've pointed out that harmony is really tied to personality. And, you know, we always talk about mind, how it brings the potential of adaptability. Personality, spirit, mind, that they're doing a triplet there. And, of course, how do they end it? They end it, you know, the personality, pattern, spirit, which dominates mind, which dominates matter, you know, which controls matter. And they were presaging that. See, so just think about, just think about how carefully they use words. Like if I'm saying that the word adjustment there is tied to spirit, you must face facts and adjust them to ideals. Oh, they use the same word there too. How about that? they're really good at that. Start to notice that stuff. How carefully they've selected the use of words and what they're indicating. Adaptation, that's mind. But when you're talking about adjustment, you're talking about ordering things relative to the unity of spirit. You're not just adapting to them with that liquid adaptability thing, mind. You know, you're adjusting them, looking at the ideal, face facts, and adjusting them to ideals. And if you do it so that the two come together, that's wisdom. You've achieved an expression of wisdom. Yeah. To have such non-miss adjustment eyes.
Now they use caps in that eminence, just by the way.
Oh yeah.
Speaking to precision.
Yeah. You know, they capitalize it all because see, really, like I said, you can give it the words that we normally use, you know, the Almighty and the Supreme and the Mother, you know. It's just a rephrasing of those capitalized words, after all. Let's see. Okay, that'll probably do it for now. Oh, you got a question?
Well, I just throw in something I noticed that is kind of out of sync with what you're talking about, but the blending and blurring of sequence, I believe, is used exactly that phrasing. Mm-hmm. If I remember right, when Jesus is on his Mediterranean tours and he's talking to some.
Mm.
About mind or something, and they're just going on. And he says when you approach those upper levels, there's a blending and blurring of sequence.
Yeah, and there, you know, the simple understanding there is just what we're talking about there, that differential between mind and spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, precisely, your spiritual consciousness has no notion of time. That's why left unchallenged, woven to your material consciousness, it can be problematic. Since it has no notion of time, it can lead to lots of immediate tension within you. Why aren't things perfect? Right? I mean, that's where that comes from, because it's clueless about time. It doesn't know it takes time. We don't live in a fiat perfect. We live in a perfecting universe. Your spiritual consciousness has to be taught that by your material consciousness. Your material consciousness, yeah, the ideals are wonderful, but you've got to remember there's time. Well, I don't want to remember there's time. I want it now. I want it now. You know, spiritual consciousness loves to use the word now and put an exclamation point after it. Notice when humans do that. Okay? You know, I want such and so now. Okay, well, what about your material consciousness? What is it saying? I don't care about that. That's evil. I've rejected that.
Yeah. It's the power of no.
Right? Hey, you know, and if you ever catch yourself saying that, whoop, wait a minute. That's not soul-like. Soul-like has two fibers woven together. You know, something that faces facts and something that represents ideals, and I've woven them together.
Okay? Now is not now.
You know? And I can live that, you know, because I live here. I can't live ideals directly. I don't live in Avona. Okay, I have to translate ideals into ideas. Ideas are connected to facts. Ideals are independent of facts.
In South Africa, they use the expression "now, now."
Now, now, yeah. Not just now, now, now. And not just all y'all. For those who are coming from the South.
Chris, when Jesus turned the water to wine, mm-hmm. would that be an example of losing consciousness of time?
This is a little bit. It's that's a little bit different. You know that's more kind of directly tied to a Creator Son is conditioned by space but not by time. And now it's obviously not unrelated. A little bit different things coming in there to play though. Okay.
It is conjectured that at this far distant time, the spirit person of the Supreme and attained power of the Almighty will have achieved coordinate development, and that both, as unified in and by the Supreme Mind, will factualize as the Supreme Being, a completed actuality in the universes, an actuality which will be observable by all creature intelligences, reacted to by all created energies, coordinated in all spiritual entities, and experienced by all universe personalities. This concept implies the actual sovereignty of the Supreme in the grand universe. It is altogether likely that the present Trinity administrators will continue as his vicegerents, but we believe that the present demarcations between the seven superuniverses will gradually disappear and that the entire grand universe will function as a perfected whole.
Just a little quiz. Who are the present Trinity administrators?
The Ancients of Days.
Mm. Right? Yeah, remember, we've brought that up a few times, because now we know when we hear the word Trinity, we're thinking about, okay, how does the Mother come into play? You know, and that was one of the things that, you know, one of the first kind of big ahas was to be able to finally complete this picture and really be able to understand the psychic circles and all this sort of stuff. You know, you were missing a level in the Mothers there without thinking about them as Trinity origin beings, which means they have a very definitive Mother character. I wonder if they give rise to, you know, very definitive Mother-like expressions as creators. You know, because we don't often talk about them as creators. Remember, they're one of the sevenfold creators. You know, an example of them functioning as a creator is, you know, they participate in the creation of life carriers. That's an example of them functioning as a creator. But a really, really direct example. What was that? Oh, life carriers, yeah. Creator sons, creator mother spirits, and Ancients of Days, all three are involved in creating a life carrier. Yeah, but just to recognize that they create those direct wombs that reflect the commonality, you know, that you don't just have the super universe level. Above that, you have the collective super universe level. And they can do that. The Ancients of Days are definitively individual super universe like. That's why there's seven, because there's seven of them, and they're different. But the Ancients of Days are the same. I mean, they're unique personalities, but their fundamental nature is the same. It's common all the way around. So they when they create mind wombs, they're a mind womb for the whole. That's the mind womb you're in as a finaliter. You know, you graduate out of the mind womb of the seventh master spirit, the seven reflective spirits, reflective mother spirits that are mind womb in the super universe. You graduate out of that, even as a before you get to paradise. And you're a graduate spirit. When you go from the seventh to the sixth circuit of Avona, you graduate out of that womb of the seven, mother spirit, reflective mother spirits. So what mind womb are you in after that? See, have you ever asked, you know, it's like, well, now, you know, I was in the creative mother spirit's mind womb, and then I was in the seven reflective mother spirit's mind womb, and then what? And then when you finally figure that out, it's like, oh, that's why they're unrevealed. Because this book only reveals the ascension career stuff, and they're really my mind womb after the ascension career. That's why they're not directly revealed and talked about. They're the next story. But it's obvious, it's easy to deduce, you know, that when you start putting all the pieces together. So they're...
Bob's working on the next one.
They create those. Okay.
It is possible that the Supreme may then be personally resident on Eversa, the headquarters of Orvintan, from which he will direct the administration of the time creations. But this is really only a conjecture. Certainly, though, the personality of the Supreme Being will be definitely contactable at some specific locality, although the ubiquity of his deity presence will probably continue to permeate the universe of universes. What the relation of the super-universe citizens of that age will be to the Supreme, we do not know, but it may something like the present relationship. It may be something like the present relationship between the Havona natives and the Paradise Trinity.
Can anyone tell me what that relationship is? We talked about. We brought that up just, I think, last time, wasn't it? It's just again in a rudimentary way. Havona natives are Trinity origin beings.
Yes.
Paradise citizens and Havona natives are Trinity origin beings. So they're pointing out that, again, to appreciate, you know, there's going to be a very definitive mother, like, you know, nature to them. And, you know, we brought that up when we were talking about them here just recently. But so they're, you know, so when they say what the relation of the super universe citizens of that age would be to the Supreme, we do not know. But, okay, so if you went back and thought about that, they're trying to, you know, think about what they're suggesting. You know that once we're all in the Absinite age, we're no longer in the finite womb, the Supreme as mother. We're in the Absinite womb, the Ultimate as mother. We are being upheld by the Absinite upholder, not only you and I, but the Supreme Being as well. But with a little qualification, because unlike you and I, the Supreme Being who's in that womb of the Absinite mother is also part of the first experiential trinity and part of the second experiential trinity, and hence spans that whole space of the Absinite. And so hence, although the ubiquity of his deity presence will probably continue, that's what they're pointing out. He can't be just a point personality just like you and I. There's got to be still some kind of ubiquity phenomenon. It's not going to be as directly as mother, because God, the Ultimate, is functioning now, you know, very directly in that mother mode, like he did when he was a she. but that's what they're suggesting. Just reminding you that, yeah, he's in that greater mind womb, but there's another aspect because he's deity and we're not. And yeah, so that's what they're pointing to there.
Chris, why do you think they say that it's? They think he'll be personally resonant on you.
Oh, yeah, that one. Remember, they point to that speculation in some other spots. That's just, they're trying to extend their deductive reasoning as far as they think they can take it. And they're going, well, I mean, there has to be a seat. I mean, he's always have a seed point, like Michael's son, you know, has a seed point on salvation, you know, like ours has on salvation. Because they're source centers. They're center first with source added on, you know, and they're a he. And they're a she, they're a source with a center added on, they're center sources. But you know, at that point as the Supreme Being, he's a source center. So he has to be, he has to have a center point. In Majestan is a source center, he has a center point on paradise. Okay, so the thing, okay, the Supreme Being has to have an anchor point, a center point, a home base. Well, it's, you know, I think, well, must be, have to be out in the super universe level somewhere. It doesn't seem logical for it to be in Avona or on paradise. It's like, well, of all the places you could put him in the super universe level, even if you allow for some sort of absentite reorganizing of the geometry, because we're going to transcend finite geometry, what would be the point that kind of would be most rationally supreme-like? Well, it would have to be most likely when you have all three together in the seventh super universe rather than, you know, that's why they're thinking that way, just simply because the seventh master spirit, and remember, they tell you, you know, go back and read about the master spirits. When you're in Havona, it's the seventh master spirit, who's Father, Son, Spirit together, who can actually represent to the levels that you can represent, the, you know, the supreme, or at least supremacy. You know, when you're in Havona there. See, so that's why they're just connecting the dots there.
If it all blurs together and reverses, would that be the headquarters of the grand universe then?
Well, see, you know, the thing that's really immediately tied to this, where you go, it's like, well, what's, you know, it's an ellipse, I thought, you know. And then if he stood here, wouldn't that kind of make it lopsided? I mean, it's just like when they talk about the circuits of Havona, and they talk about each circuit as a pilot world. Somehow, and you're going, well, they said it was just like a string of pearls. I mean, what's so special about this one? They're all the same. Isn't it some, you know, elliptically symmetric? You know, but they said it's a pilot world. So you know that somehow it can't be that. And we've talked about that. I mean, what they give you is just the finite projection of the geometry of Havona. Havona really has an absentite geometry. And when you project it into the finite, it projects pretty simplistically into the finite, you know, where you can talk about it as a plane. You only need three dimensions of the finite. But see, in some way, if you could understand it in the absentite geometry, there's something central about that pilot world or something, you know, or entrance-like, or, I mean, there's something special about that pilot world in an absentite geometry, so that it's somehow you're at a, you know, at a logical point, you know, there. You know what it is. I mean, who knows? I mean, we can't think in absentite geometry, but it has to be just logically. So it's the same thing here. The super universe level is going to take on more of an absentite geometry, like Havona actually has right now. And there'll be something central like to Uversa. Instead of just somewhere along the circumference, you know, along the perimeter. All right, so then you see there's a big break. You know it's going to be a grand finale. So let's read the grand finale.
The perfected grand universe of those future days will be vastly different from what it is at present. Gone will be the thrilling adventures of the organization of the galaxies of space, the planting of life on the uncertain worlds of time, and the evolving of harmony out of chaos, beauty out of potentials, truth out of meanings, and goodness out of values. The time universes will have achieved the fulfillment of finite destiny, and perhaps for a space there will be rest. Relaxation from the age-long struggle for evolutionary perfection, but not for long. Certainly, surely, and inexorably, the enigma of the emergent deity of God, the ultimate, will challenge these perfected citizens of the settled universes, just as their struggling evolutionary forebears were once challenged by the quest for God the Supreme. The curtain of cosmic destiny will draw back to reveal the transcendent grandeur of the alluring absentite quest for the attainment of the Universal Father on those new and higher levels revealed in the ultimate of creature experience. Sponsored by a mighty messenger, temporarily sojourning on Urantia.
Still here.
Sure enough, just like a good crescendo. It has it's triple forte or maybe even quadruple forte. There the exclamation points.
These guys know how to finish.
Notice one little fun thing. There's a really fun little thing, you know. I guess I am going to actually, you know, we all have this sitting next to me all the time, the threefold actuality. And we've pointed out fact, truth, goodness. But we also have truth and goodness in another spot when it's beauty, truth, goodness. Okay? And we've pointed out that you start with just the actuality of truth and goodness, but you can go on to a realization, the reality of truth and goodness. And that's what they're talking to here, because you know they are, because they brought in beauty. Okay? So you know the truth and goodness are in the reality sense, not in the actuality sense, because beauty is in there, which is fundamentally reality. And notice how they word the phrases because of that difference. Instead of saying, you know, something like just the truth of meanings or the truth in meanings or something like that. You know, truth out of meanings.
Goodness out of
values. Goodness out of values. You know, you can talk about, you know, the truth of meanings. Is it just an actuality? Okay, but they're pointing out, you know, have you taken that sort of that gift that is laid out before you, and have you used your personality to grab a hold of it and to realize it within you? Not the totality of it, obviously, but have you drawn a measure of it into you with your personality, a gripping mechanism, faith grasp? You know, it can grip this stuff and realize it within you. If you just dwell nearer that sheet of beauty, you know, potential, because it's just potential, or that sheet of truth or goodness potential, it's like, ooh, feel that. Okay, what does it tell you in paper 102? No survival value to that experience. I mean, that experience, you know, will get translated up to the Almighty, but that's not yours, you know, because that's just an actuality. Have you grasped it, you know? Have you drawn truth, see, out of that? And into you. Have you drawn goodness out of that and into you? That's and interestingly, that's how this section started, the completed realization. You know, and if you didn't get it the first time, the completion of the realization. They seated you in the beginning for what they put at the end. Again, to really see that differential between the actuality and the reality of those. You know, just like, you know, I pointed out when I made this, I purposely capitalized the adjutants in this. You know, and going, well, Chris, you made a mistake there. There's nowhere in the book where those adjutants are capitalized. Well, yeah, it's because they're just talking about the actuality of the adjutants there as energies, you know, engaging you. But if you actually engage them, and then really engage them, you can take it up a notch. You can become the spirit of wisdom. You can become the spirit of counsel. Capital letters. You can personalize that actuality. You know? And that was the point of doing that. Just like we were talking tonight, you know, you can take, well, you know, if you write absolute mind, lowercase a, lowercase m, you're just talking about it as an actuality. But if they capitalize the a and the m, they're talking about the personalization of that mind. They're talking about a person, another name for the person where you're really focusing on, you know, and there's even that differential of technically, if they want to, they talk about the absolute mind, that's another name for the conjoint actor. The infinite mind with a capital I and a capital M, that's the infinite spirit. You're really talking about the third source from the two different sides. And, you know, there's all of that precision that they're using. But again, that fundamentally, you know, to take it beyond the energy of symmetry, say, and really have it be a spirit of wisdom. Well, use your spirit pattern. Purpose that now. Make that you. Give it survival value within you. You become the spirit of wisdom. You become the spirit of instinct, the spirit of understanding, etc. You know, take that on. Personalize that. Give it survival value. Don't just give it to the Almighty. Because if you give it all to the Almighty, then you'll be a drop of water in the ocean. You'll blend into the Almighty at the end. Do you want to blend into the Almighty, or do you want to make it to the end upheld by the Mother? It's your choice. Only persons are upheld by the Mother. Energy selves blend into the Almighty. If you're a mere actuality, your destiny is the Almighty, a drop of water in the ocean. So that, you know, the individual members, the individual persons, are connected through the Mother. Yep. Yep.
Lenny gave me the pen.
Yep. 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 I saw you back there. I was just.
Okay. Just Therese, if you have any comments, truth, beauty, and goodness throughout the book. In this part, they bring in harmony.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. 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 Yeah.
The language of the song. That's correct.
Harmony is down here in the personality block. Okay. The harmony of what? The harmony of truth, beauty, and goodness. Truth, beauty, and goodness are a threefold actuality. They're not self-harmonizing. They have to be grabbed and woven together as one. They have to be harmonized. The word harmony is very tightly tied to personality in the book. Even in places you might not suspect, like you're in a spot and they seem to be talking technically about different senses of sequence, different senses of time, a mindal sense of time and a spirit sense of time and even a personality sense of time, they say. And you're going, what on earth are they talking about? Well, time is a chronicity of motion. It's a, you know, it's fundamentally talking about sequence. There's different ways that you can recognize sequence. That you can put an ing word tied to it. There's progressing mind. That's that time sense that the mind has. It senses progressing. There's perfecting spirit. You have progressing mind, that's development. You have perfecting spirit, that's growth. That ing, that's a spirit consciousness of sequence. So if you have a sense of the progressing, you have a sense of the perfecting, there's another ing. What about the harmonizing? There's a sequence of harmonizing. There's a, you know, this and then this and then this and then this to harmonizing. And only your personality recognizes that.
Right? And the ideal model was Jesus when they mention it.
Sure. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that you can see, you know, that in his life and teachings is looking for not just the progressing, not just the perfecting, but look for the harmonizing. See, and the perfecting, that's much more directly tied to Father, really, in a sense. That word, yeah, I mean, it's not simplistic, but harmonizing, okay, the word harmony doesn't mean anything relative to the Father. The Father is pre-differentiation. So, I mean, he's a harmony of one note. Okay? But, yeah, three notes make a chord, matter, mind, and spirit, beauty, truth, and goodness. Okay? That the Mother, see? That's why they tell you, you know, that the Mother influence dominates the personalities of your local universe career. You've got this incredible initiation by the Father, and then it's going to take you through the whole universe career. It's like, forget about that Father stuff. I can't handle any more initiation. You know how long it's going to take me to harmonize what you've just done, Father? I mean, it's going to take me a long time to wrap my mind around that, okay? And it does. You know? We talked about that last time. Yeah. Or the time before last time, it was. So yeah, that's when you see harmony, you know, That's why you hear me when I stress these two different consecrations. You consecrate your will to the perfect will of God the Father. Mm-hmm. You consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. And one must do something as well as be something. You have to do both. Twofold consecration. All right. Well, that ought to do it for...
That ought to alarm you.
That ought to alarm you. Okay, so everyone...
There'll be a test.
No. Yeah, and it's the next, and it's the next paper. Okay, everyone take a deep breath this next week. We're going to have to jump into another pretty, you know, deep paper again, just like, you know, we slowly worked our way through deity and reality and universe levels of reality. You know, this one's got some heavy-duty stuff in it again, and it sort of just starts right from the first sentence. So just, you know, prepare yourself for that. We'll try not to belabor it, but we know we're trying not to just quickly pass through these papers. We want to see if we can leave these papers with something that we didn't have when we started, because we want to have something that we've never had when we read not only the foreword, but when we read the five papers about God the Father. We want to find things in God the Father, in those God the Father papers that we've never seen before. We want to do. Okay. So we want to take the time to really see if we can step through this a bit without overdoing it. But to not just glaze, you know, which is so easy to do.
Deep thinking.
Yep. All right, let's take a little moment here.